Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is an author, teacher, and he is the founder of ConvertKit. In 2013, he launched ConvertKit, email marketing for professional bloggers. He spent a couple years trying to get traction and also dealing with friends and mentors telling him to maybe just give up and move on to another product. But he didn't, and it's a good thing. ConvertKit now has serious traction. With a team of 28 people fully distributed around the world, and they do over $500,000 in monthly recurring revenue. During this conversation, we discuss paying attention to things that don't scale, user onboarding in software, and teaching everything you know. Now, let's hack Nathan Berry. So on this show, we spend a lot of time talking about strengths, and we spend a lot of time talking about weaknesses. I feel that oftentimes it's almost more important to know what your weaknesses are than it is to know your strengths. Our strengths come naturally to us. Our weaknesses are things to me, as long as we have this growth mindset, are things that we can learn, things that we can get better at. That's why I'm so happy that Skillshare has decided to sponsor this episode. With over 3 million members and more than 17,000 classes, Skillshare is like the Netflix for online learning. You can take classes in business planning, public speaking, email marketing, time management, productivity, Evernote if you wish, or if you want to take classes that I've taken so far on Skillshare, Rand Fishkin of Moz has an excellent course called Introduction to SEO, Tactics and Strategy for Entrepreneurs. And then there's a Seth Godin one that's about 3 hours long. I think it's about 10 videos. The Modern Marketing Workshop that I would think is absolutely necessary for anybody trying to create and sell products or services online today. And now you can. And as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you can do it absolutely for free right now at Skillshare.com/hack. Because Skillshare is giving Hack the Entrepreneur listeners a 1 month free trial. Not like one of those trials that gives you just parts of something. This is a free trial with unlimited access to over 17,000 classes. That's right. It's your chance to learn now. Go to Skillshare.com/hack and start your free 1 month trial today. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Oh man, absolutely my pleasure. It's been a long time coming, so I'm glad we're getting to sit down and do this. We got a lot to cover, so should we jump into it?
Sounds good.
Let's do it. Nathan, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Yeah, I think it's paying attention to things that don't scale and being willing to do things even if they're not going to get scalable results. So I think this idea first came from Paul Graham when he talked about, he has an essay called Do Things That Don't Scale. And he talked about like Stripe's early growth and a bunch of other companies. But for us, that doing things that don't scale came down to mostly direct sales. So in my early days coming from the blogging world, I was trying to grow a company through blogging and through content marketing. And the hard thing there is that if someone doesn't buy from your blog post, they'll never tell you why. But if you're having a conversation and I'm like, hey, you should buy ConvertKit, you should sign up. Like, you got to give me a reason why not, at least. And so you can learn so much to affect your marketing and everything else. And so we actually drove most of our early growth through direct sales. And even though it's something that everyone's like, oh, that doesn't scale, I need to use Facebook ads or I need to use something else, I'm like, no, that's okay. I'll send cold emails. I'll pick up the phone and get those early customers, because that like it's recurring revenue. That's something that we can build on top of, and we've been able to build a pretty big company that way.
I would say so. I mean, before we started the call, we were talking about like the way you're scaling. So I find it fascinating that your one thing is to do things that don't scale, yet seem to have this sort of correlating effect of actually causing your business to scale.
Yeah. So I think those, like that initial traction is really hard to get when you're purely doing scalable things. So like maybe we define scalable things as like content marketing, Facebook ads, like big partnerships and distribution channels, all that kind of thing. And if you're at like $1,000 a month in revenue or something, it's really hard to get those because no one trusts you. And no partner is like, hey, yeah, actually, let's do a big promotion. Why don't we feature you? And so they're like, so we have 50,000 customers and you have 50 customers. Like, I don't think this is going to work. But what happens is if you reach out to people directly and you go after your exact target market and convince them to sign up and sell them one account at a time. Often for us, that was adding $29 a month in revenue at a time. Then what happens is that can start to build on itself. So a few years ago, I talked to a founder of a company who they just had explosive growth. They'd gone from like 2,000 or 2,500 a month in revenue to 50,000 a month in revenue in 1 year. And I was like, man, how did you do it? And he's like, oh, word of mouth. And I remember thinking like, word of mouth? What do I do with that? Like, how can I take that advice? Like, oh shoot, that's right. I forgot to pull the word of mouth lever. I should have done that. Okay, now when I go home, I'll just be like, perfect. We'll put word of mouth into action and now we'll grow. Cause it just doesn't work like that. You can't do that. If you don't have any traction, then like there's no one to refer. What I found is actually doing those direct sales and that thing that doesn't scale, as everyone says, they'll tell like IBM who has like 10,000 salespeople that sales doesn't scale. They'll laugh at you. But you know, if you do that, then you can get those first 10 customers and those first 50. And if you give them a great experience, then they'll start to tell more people. So you can really kickstart that word of mouth through direct sales. But if you're like setting out to try to grow through these scalable channels, it's just not gonna work. So the non-scalable things make these other things that we have used to grow, like affiliates and webinars and some of these other platforms. They've made it so much easier, but it starts with the things that don't scale.
Right. So did you go into it like as the founder at that point? I'm assuming you led sales. You're talking about cold emails, getting on the phone with people, making those sales. Did you have a conscious sort of, could you say your first 20 customers, first 50? Like, were you like, okay, Nathan, at 250, I need to do this to 250 people and then we can pull a different lever?
No, it's pretty much all the way through. So I probably changed the size of the customer that I was going after. Because in those early days, I might go after, you know, really any customer. But then if someone was at that $50 a month price point, not only would we have a very high touch sales process, but then we'd also do the entire account migration for them for free. And, you know, so I would be the one like logging into their FTP and like copying stuff over from their MailChimp account and basically doing anything possible to win the deal. And so all that's changed is, well, I guess we have a team to do the concierge migrations now, but I still do direct sales pretty much every day. The only difference is that now I'm going after accounts that would be $500 or $1,000 a month for us rather than the $50 or $100 a month accounts. But we have a team now doing the smaller end of the accounts as well. So it's worked all the way through because we found that we can use the sales to get a lot of traction in an individual market. And then those referrals will start coming in. So like I've put some work, this is totally random, but there's a community like this financial independence, early retirement subset of a personal finance community. And I learned that we had a couple of the well-known blogs in that space. And so after putting some effort to it, now we're at the point where we have like 50 or 60% of the well-known blogs in that space. And so now that we've put in that kind of non-scalable effort, I can trust that any other bloggers coming up are going to be like, oh yeah, ConvertKit, I've heard about it. These five bloggers in our tiny little community use. And so I can trust that the word of mouth will really kick in. But I like to create a little echo chamber first, even if it's a little more work.
Yeah, so fascinating. So I think you're talking about word of mouth in this sense as like part of your getting affiliates at this point.
Well, I guess both, right? Because I want both affiliates and customers. You know, so the nice thing for our business, right, is that I can I can sell someone twice, right? So if there's a blogger or someone, right, they need something for their email. So I'm selling them on switching to us from Infusionsoft or MailChimp. But then maybe they say no to that. Well, first of all, let's go with they say yes. Then I get to sell them in that case. And then later, once they're having a great experience, I get to reach out and say, well, hey, actually, do you have people in your audience who might be a good fit? And then I get to sell them on becoming an affiliate. And then for other people, we get the other side of it where maybe they say, no, I'm so embedded in my email tool that I'm not going to switch. And so then I can just jump to selling on part step two and say, like, well, are there people in your audience who might benefit from ConvertKit? So I really get to sell both sides of it. And we apply direct sales very heavily to both.
Yeah. Okay. So I was wondering, you answered it. I was trying to figure out if you, as like the CEO, when you say your customers now are bigger, is it because they have the potential to reach out to their audience below them? Because you offer a really unique affiliate program within your market. So many people offer affiliate programs within the email marketing space, but it's not 30% recurring, which is what yours is, which I think highly leverages word of mouth.
Yeah, I think it does. Another nice thing about our business model is that our pricing is just per subscriber. So if someone has, you know, $29 for 1,000 subscribers, but then we're able to sell these bigger accounts that have a million and a half subscribers, and they're going to be paying, you know, $4,500 a month. So we get to like kind of dip our toes in this enterprise pricing without having to like spin up that type of a sales team to go after that community.
Yeah. And so that objection with people being embedded into the email marketing system they use right now, or email provider, I guess, that seems to me like such a big sticking point of people entering your market, and that somebody probably would have warned you about 4 years ago when you started, being like, right, people don't want to switch. Like, they've been with AWeber for 8 years, those yes, kind of things. And obviously that's got to be an objection that you've learned to overcome.
Yeah. So that was the first big objection where, you know, I talked to someone, you know, they'd learn about it and they're like, okay, this sounds cool. I like the product. And then so like, you know, I'm just not ever going to switch. Like, I like you. I like the product. I like where you're headed, but it's too much work to switch. I'm not going to do it. And I remember early on, I tried to convince people like, oh, it's not that much work. And they're like, yeah, that's convincing. Yeah. But what was interesting is that they hung everything on like all of their objections, because there's a ton of reasons to not buy something, right? So whatever you're selling, there's a bunch of reasons to not buy it. But if you're having a one-on-one conversation, that person has to give you a reason. And so often people would have, it's too much work to switch, as the reason they would give. And so they'd really kind of hang all of their objections on this one thing. And so what I found is when you said, or when I would say, tell you what, I really want you as a customer. If switching is the biggest objection, I will do it all for you completely for free. What happened is, like, I imagine this person like leaning on this big objection, and then you just take it away, and then they like fall into the sale happening, you know, because they're just like, oh, okay, all right, let's do it. And so we have this like super high touch process that I remember early on, everyone's like, that's horribly unprofitable. Like, you as the company founder are logging into someone's WordPress site and switching their MailChimp forms to ConvertKit forms. And you're logging into MailChimp and exporting their subscribers, and you're copying and pasting. Like, how is this ever going to be a real business? And like, the fact of the matter is, one, recurring revenue is fantastic. So getting someone in is really key. But the other thing that I learned is that every sale we made the next one a tiny bit easier. And so even if I was spending too much time to make this profitable, well, I guess the other thing that I'd say on that is everyone's like, oh, I'm the founder, my time's worth more than that. But if you're making like $1,000 a month in revenue, your time's not even worth like minimum wage, you know? So kind of do whatever it takes to get these customers and get this traction, and then go from there. And then we've built it into a system that's totally scalable, where we've got two full-time people who just, all they do is concierge migrations now. And it's turned into this thing. It wins some really great fans, and then it wins referrals, and it gets that word of mouth going. But it starts with these things where it's like, wait, if I do the math on this, you know, like our payback period of switching over this $50 a month account is like 2.5 years. Like, this is a terrible idea, but it kind of works out in the end.
Yeah, it seems to be. And it's interesting to say that, I mean, when you're making $1,000 a month, your time is not even worth minimum wage. Most founders don't want to admit that. They still want to be the founder and the CEO. I'm the CEO of my own thing. And I think that's the problem. They don't want to step down and do that sort of work that needs to be done when there's nobody else to do it. So that's at $1,000 a month revenue. Now you're at over $500,000 a month. How has your position changed throughout this time?
Yeah. So now I try to think about what is it going to enable? If this goes well, what is it going to enable in the future? Right. So that's me noticing, okay, every sale that we make is making the next sale a tiny bit easier, because then that list of like, oh, who uses ConvertKit gets a little bit longer. But then I also try to think, is this manual process that we're doing now, is it helping to create a system going forward? Because if that's the case, then it's worth my time, because then I'm building a system that other people can take over and run. So like, I don't do concierge migrations anymore because we have a system and we have people to do that. But I always like getting my hands dirty and jumping in and seeing like, what's the exact process here? And then the other thing is, I think of recurring revenue, I like the ability to kind of stack it. So I'm willing to do these one-off things, even if it's not going to drive revenue long-term, because, you know, I get to build on, we had $700,000 a month in revenue, and then this one promotion that's a ton of work won't drive won't drive new revenue every month, but it will drive like a bunch of new accounts who will stay for a while. And so I think of that recurring revenue as stacking on itself, like short-term hustle becomes worth it.
Right. So you're still in the trenches. You like to get your hands dirty.
And then if it's worth continuing on and putting somebody in that place.
Yep. I like that a lot. Now, one thing that I've had to let go of a little bit is always being like that first in line person. And I have to let other people in the company experiment and try these other things. So one thing that we do that doesn't scale at all, that was not my idea and I've actually never done, but it came from a guy named Matt on our team, is he likes to welcome people. Well, so first we gave Matt a very specific problem to solve. And it started out as like, hey, help us reduce churn. But they were like, okay, that's way too broad, because is that churn on small accounts or big accounts? Is that churn in people on the onboarding or people who have been with us for 2 years? And so we broke it down and said, okay, in the churn, your goal is to reduce churn in the first 30 days. And so he broke it down to days 0 to 7, 7 to 14, then 14 to 30. And when he actually graphed that and paid attention to it, he was like, okay, what can I do to improve this churn problem? And one thing that he came up with was sending individual personalized welcome videos to every new customer that signed up, which... talk about things that don't scale. But he did this and he tested it on a cohort. And what he found was that 0 to 7 day churn dropped by 40%. And our theory on this is something like, if you sign up for a tool, like you and I, we've spent enough time around the internet. We know that if we sign up for a tool, like our email address is now a row in a table in a database somewhere. And like no one knows or cares or noticed in any way. What happens when you get this email that has a video and you click on it and it's Matt like walking around through his neighborhood or standing in his office going, hey, John, I just saw that you signed up for ConvertKit. Super excited to have you on board. And he'll personalize more stuff. He'll be like, and notice that you're running your site on WordPress. So you definitely want to check out our WordPress plugin, because that'll make adding the forms a lot easier. But seriously, so excited to have you on board. Hit me up if you have any questions. What would happen is like people were like, wait, someone saw me. Someone noticed me. And so if you hit that as you're going through the setup process, if you hit some snag and you're like, ah, screw this, like forget about it, you're going to give it a little bit more effort because someone noticed you and there's some personal connection there. And if you need help, you're just going to be like, oh, hey, Matt, like I have this question. That's the reason I think that the churn dropped. But he ended up building out a system so that he could do these in a scalable way. He uses an app called Bonjoro, which lets him like just record these from his phone. And then he worked with some of the more technically inclined members of our team to write a script that would automatically tell him for every new customer if they're using WordPress or Squarespace or Wix or something like that, so he could mention that in the video. And I think on average, he's doing like 40 to 70 of these a day. And it takes a couple hours, but it's had a huge impact on our revenue and churn. And like, you know, you might be like, oh, that's terrible, that'll never scale. But other people on the team can step in and be like, hey, Matt, I'd be willing to do this for an hour to pick up some of the slack while you're out on vacation or doing some of this other stuff. So we're totally willing to try these experiments, test things very, very heavily to make sure we're actually getting the numbers, and then do this thing that totally doesn't scale.
Yeah, I love this idea of the not scaling, of how it keeps coming back. But, and so this idea with the videos, I mean, 40, 50, 60, 70 of them a day. I know you just announced 15,000 customers. So it's, yeah, that would be a lot of videos if you're doing this from day one, which I'm sure you were going to going forward. But it kind of brings us to this interesting just idea of projects and how you say there's issues within where you need to deal with churn, or I know you just recently put out the new automations. You guys did your first live conference this year. So all these sorts of different projects, your team is almost 30 people, I think, at this point.
Yep.
You guys are fully distributed team. How is it that these projects are sort of coming to fruition? So I know like there was an issue with churn, and so somebody like Matt ran with it. But with automations, or like if you want to talk part of the product, or if you want to talk, I guess, community building around the live event, where do these like ideas stem from? And are they sort of like organic within the company and something you encourage? But I would love to know, you as the CEO, how you are determining for you and your team what projects are sort of worth your time, energy, and resources.
Yeah. So we've spent some time over the last year or so to kind of refine like why we actually exist as a company, and having that, coming up with what our North Star is so that we can keep referring back to it. And it took a little bit of time, but what we settled on is that we exist as a company to help creators earn a living, to help bloggers earn a living. Then when we think about doing something like a conference, then we don't have to measure it against, okay, like this is going to build X amount of goodwill, and we think this that goodwill will help with churn and also drive slightly more referrals. If we spend however many $100,000 on a conference, then like we should expect to make our money back in 6.5 months. Like we don't have to think about it in those terms at all, because we get to think about it instead of, okay, can we get 300 people in a room and invest in them so heavily that their businesses are going to grow, like in a meaningful way? Can we make these connections? Can we make these relationships? And can we put them in front of these amazing speakers? So a project like the conference comes about from really that core mission of, okay, if we're trying to move our customers' businesses forward, what's a way that we can do that? You know, maybe that's outside of software. And so that's how, like, we're also shooting a documentary right now on how bloggers earn a living. We've done like this big annual report on the state of the blogging world. And these all have some kind of business advantages, I guess, but they're not like, there's not an ROI attached to them. So those projects we do because they move our mission forward. The other projects, so like visual automations, that's something more that every couple years I like to look at. Basically anything that I build from a like design and product perspective, and say, okay, if I threw out every preconceived notion and every like sunk cost of, well, this is already built or things like that, like what would I build today? So let's imagine that like someone bought ConvertKit, and for whatever reason, I didn't have a non-compete and I like desperately wanted to be back in the email space. Like what would I build completely from scratch? What would I design? And the idea being really that like, if you don't replace yourself and you don't disrupt yourself every couple of years, then someone else will. And so that's what really brought us to visual automations. And we were able to build something that was so much easier to use and yet even more powerful than a lot of the stuff that's out there. And it was just a ton of fun too. Like that's probably the combination of, am I having fun? Do I feel like we're truly innovating? So that's been we're like 8 months into this project now.
Do you feel as comfortable in the product side of the company as you do in the sales side?
I actually feel a lot more comfortable in the product side. My background is as a like user interface and user experience designer. So yeah, I was like the kid in high school and college who didn't want to go talk to anyone. And you know, so I'm way more comfortable, like give me a sketch pad or Photoshop or something like that and talking and working with a couple engineers. And I'm so much more comfortable there than I am like at a conference being like, oh man, that guy over there, I really should go say hi to him because he's got this influential blog. And then if we like, that's not me at all. But like the more you practice like the outgoing side and like doing sales and relationships and all of that, the easier it becomes.
Yeah. I was going to say, cause I took that as the exact opposite of what you just stated. I know your background in design, but it just the whole focus seems to be sales and you and you're outgoing, like in the sense, I mean, you push yourself, I guess, to do it because you have right. to do it. And it's funny because as you mentioned the first conference and could we get 300 people to sell? I remember, I guess it was like June or something, like you reaching out to me on Messenger on Facebook, like, just, are you coming to the conference? And it's like, man, he actually does this. He still is out there just like hustling, selling.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
All the time.
I think people are always watching thinking that this stuff just happens. But that's what you do. That's like literally what you spend your time doing.
Yeah. And that's something like sales got a lot easier for ConvertKit as we went along. But then we're like, oh, okay, we're going to do a conference. And for anyone who's done a live event before, at least most of the people that I talk to, like, it's much harder to sell tickets than you would think. Because like, hey, it's one thing to buy a product, but it's another thing like buy this product where you have to be in this exact location at this exact time in order to use it. We found that like, oh, okay, selling out a live event is way harder than we expected. But then when I came back to it, it was like, yeah, and so is growing a company and pretty much everything else. We have these ideas of it's going to be easy and this is going to be the best thing ever. And then we jump in and it's way more work. And then we actually like step up and do the work and the results come. Like it was a good little humbling moment of like to launch a conference and then have like 100 tickets of 300 tickets sell. And then to have to step up and like add these same principles and this like doing things that don't scale to that in order to like work our way up to selling the 300 tickets that we wanted to sell. So it's always the case. And I feel like the more successful you get, the maybe the lazier you get. And then you get these nice humbling moments to remind you and bring you back to reality and be like, okay, yeah, I always have to do the work.
It just, sometimes it'll get easier. But so that's two completely different projects, a live event and product side, basically, I mean, a new product being built as the automations. So automations I'm going to take as there's probably a success metric sort of you put in there of what's determining whether it's working or not, but it's software. So I'm sure it's just a complete iterative process where you, it is going to stay. Like you're not going back to the old ConvertKit after this.
Right.
But with a core, I mean, with the live event, having never done it before, what sort of success metric did you put into place? And if you would have only sold maybe half the tickets, would you have iterated to do it better next year? Or would that have been shelved and move on to something else?
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of like a feeling or a taste that comes with it. I think if we'd done the conference and it like the only thing that probably that mattered as far as the success metric is the feeling that we had walking away from it, right? I think it's Ira Glass talks about when you're brand new to something and your taste is further like more developed than your skill. And so you know that like this thing could be better. Like you put all this work into it and you have these ideas, but you don't get the results out of it that you thought. And like the end result is like, oh man, it's not at the level that I had hoped. I think if we had walked away from conference year one and been disappointed by it, maybe not by attendance, but by the experience that we were able to create, then we would have gone, okay, maybe we should stick to software. But instead what happened is we walked away from it and just this amazing feeling, and not only our feeling, but the feedback as well of like, this is one of the best conferences that I've ever been to. And like, I wasn't the MC of the event, so I got to attend like pretty much every talk and just sit in the back and enjoy the conference with everyone else. But like, just walked away with this amazing feeling of like, wow, we created something that's really, really fantastic. And then when like, I don't know, like a quarter to a third of the attendees immediately bought their tickets for next year, I was like, okay, I think that's a good enough success metric. Because I felt like we'd created something special. And I think if it had turned out as like another Me Too kind of thing, then I would have felt like, all right, let's stick to software and maybe save the live events for someone else.
All right, Nathan, this has been just absolute blast, man. I do want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I can.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So I've talked to almost 400 entrepreneurs now over the last 3 years, and there seems to be this gap that sometimes we live in. I guess this goes back actually to Ira Glass in that sort of gap he talks about, but where as creators, we always are sort of pushing ahead to the next thing we're going to create that could come out in 1 month, or that stage we get to stand on in 6 months, or that revenue metric you get to hit in 9 months from now. Whatever those metrics are we set for ourselves, it feels like walking towards the horizon. The further you walk, the further away it always gets. From the outside, you look like an absolute smashing success, but oftentimes it's just we want it when it comes next. So rather than always looking forward, Nathan, which we do have to do often, but I would love it if right now you could stop, turn around, and look behind you. You've been at this game for quite a few years now. You've been at ConvertKit for several years. It got off to sort of a slow start and now is kind of skyrocketing to the moon really quickly. But I would love it if you could tell me, how do you feel about this whole entrepreneurial sort of journey up until today?
Oh man, that's a big question. I mean, the short version is I feel pretty great about it. There's always like the roller coasters with it. But, you know, I look back like ConvertKit's a bigger success than I could have imagined. I'm having more fun than I expected to and working with better people than I thought would ever like join a company that I was running. It feels pretty amazing. But I do struggle with this idea of like always pushing for more and, you know, bigger goals. And like, it's kind of like the nature of being an entrepreneur, like you said. But then also this idea of having enough and like being satisfied and being and feeling successful. I think it's an interesting balance, and it's probably one that, or it's one that I certainly haven't figured out yet of like, how do you say, okay, this year we want to double revenue, but also I feel content. And I don't know how to like, how to balance those two things, but that's one of the things that's something that I would love to, love to figure out.
We want to double revenue, but I'm absolutely content where we are.
Right. Cause you want to, I mean, everything that's happened over the last few years is absolutely amazing. And we've exceeded, like I've exceeded my wildest dreams for ConvertKit. But at the same time, I never want to stop learning and I never want to stop pushing. And I want to, like, I want to get ConvertKit in the hands of tens of thousands of more people. And there's so much more potential, but it's like, so it's, yeah, this, this odd balance. And maybe there's a perfect place to live in that tension. And I just have to figure out exactly what that is.
Yeah, or maybe that's part of it, is actually just constantly searching for that perfect place, which is going to obviously keep moving at all times.
Yes.
Well said. Well said. So Nathan, we've got to talk about your business in passing. Can you specifically tell the listener now what ConvertKit is, who it's for, and where to track it down?
Yeah, so ConvertKit is an email marketing company for professional bloggers and creators, used by a bunch of my favorite people on the internet. And yeah, you can find it at convertkit.com. If you're using a tool like MailChimp or Infusionsoft or AWeber or ActiveCampaign or, you know, any of the other dozens of email products out there, you should come check us out. We'll do a little concierge migration and get you switched over.
Very cool. And you can be found on Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter at Nathan Berry. Same on Instagram, Facebook, and then nathanberry.com. I've got a bunch of blog posts about the journey kind of all the way along. So you can get a little snapshot of my mindset when we were at like 5,000 a month in revenue. So
very cool. Very cool. So convertkit.com is the site. Nathanberry.com is the personal site, and at Nathan Berry on all social media. I'll link to all of those in the show notes for you, as well as I'm going to find that Paul Graham essay on doing things that don't scale, that Ira Glass quote. I believe there's a video on YouTube about it, and everything else that we mentioned in this conversation will be linked to for you there. So once again, Nathan, man, thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for taking the time. I do appreciate it. And man, just keep doing what you're doing, because it's awesome to watch.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Whether you want to learn about entrepreneurship, email marketing, or productivity, Skillshare is the place. And right now, Skillshare is giving Hack the Entrepreneur listeners a 1 month free trial of unlimited access to over 17,000 class. That's right, 17,000 classes for free right now for 1 month. Go to skillshare.com/hack and you'll get your first month absolutely free. It's such a good feeling to have somebody on the show that I've wanted to have on for years, literally years. And so to make that happen finally feels really good. And I'm really happy with how that conversation turned out. I hope you got as much out of it as I did, because we went to some cool places and talked about some interesting things. And I think we learned a lot about Nathan and about sort of the process behind how he sort of, I guess the mindset behind how he created ConvertKit, dealt with the sort of lean years of it, and then started to scale it, or doing things really that don't scale. So as much as I enjoyed the conversation, this is actually my favorite part of the show. It's where we go back. We go back and we find that one thing that Nathan said. Are you ready? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
And so we have this like super high touch process that I remember early on, everyone's like, that's horribly unprofitable. Like you as the company founder are logging into someone's WordPress site and switching their MailChimp forms to ConvertKit forms. And you're logging into MailChimp and exporting their subscribers and you're copying and pasting. Like, how is this ever going to be a real business? And like the fact of the matter is, one, recurring revenue is fantastic. So getting someone in is really key. But the other thing that I learned is that every sale we made the next one a tiny bit easier. And so even if I was spending too much time to make this profitable, well, I guess the other thing that I'd say on that is everyone's like, oh, I'm the founder. My time's worth more than that. But if you're making like $1,000 a month in revenue, your time's not even worth like minimum wage, you know? So kind of do whatever it takes to get these customers and get this traction and then go from there.
And that's the hack. Nathan. This is so good. So good on a couple different places. So we're kind of tying a couple of things in, but you were on a roll, so we didn't want to cut you off. So let's go back to the beginning of this. This is coming from the founder now of a company who has a monthly recurring revenue of over $500,000. Okay, so this is somebody you need to listen to if you want to get into the product or the software space. So this isn't just theory. But this super high touch process that he created or started at the beginning himself as the founder, CEO, whatever you want to call him, when it was just him going in and literally manually moving people's email accounts from MailChimp or whatever for them, because he was a competitor of MailChimp, right? And people saying, how will this ever be profitable? This is ridiculous. You should not be doing this. This is not scalable and this will never, ever work. But he realized that first thing, which was every single sale he made, the next one was that much easier. This is key. Don't gloss over this, because this isn't just for your software product. This isn't just for your latest product even. Every sale you make today in any way, even if you're selling a different product next week or next month or next year or another service, each sale still kind of gets easier. You get better at it and you start to kind of gain the confidence and know sort of how to position these things. In Nathan's case, this made the sale easier because he could prove that it was working for all of these people. Plus those people could tell other people. But also when people were telling him that this wouldn't be profitable and this wouldn't work, he just knew to keep doing it. Because like he says, how most people, when you're the founder or the creator of the company or the CEO, you're like, my time's worth too much, so I can't do it. Yet at the same time, you don't have enough money to pay somebody to do it. And so your product never takes off. And you use that as sort of an excuse or a reason why it doesn't work. Nathan has this great thought. He's like, well, if I'm making $1,000 a month, really my time at 40 hours a week is, or 50 hours a week, or even 30 hours a week is just, it's minimum wage. Like what I should be doing this stuff to build up the monthly recurring revenue. And then as that goes up, then your time becomes more valuable. And you can put people in place, which he has now learned to scale those things that he used to do and get other people to do them. This is brilliant. This is smart. This is not theory. This is actually how it works. Nathan, thank you so very, very much. So we've talked a lot about ConvertKit. Now my guess is, if you haven't tried it, that you probably want to give it a go. And they just released out of beta their new email marketing automation. This is something that I talk about all the time, is this email automation, and they built this really, really intuitive and smart system for it that I think you should probably want to check out. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/convert. If you want to go check it out, you can do that right now. I've used ConvertKit in the past for, I think, a year and a half or 2 years at this point. It works really, really, really well. I haven't tried their automation yet, but I've seen the emails. I've been looking at it, and I just haven't actually got into it, started to dig into it. But I know from Nathan And knowing Nathan and his team, that it's going to be absolutely solid. And it just came out of beta, so it's only going to get better from here. And possibly more expensive. So now's the time. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/convert. Go check it out. And I believe you'll get a free 30-day trial if you go to that link right there. But definitely, hacktheentrepreneur.com. Nathan is going to be over there. His show notes got a lot of links. So there's a Paul Graham essay. There's an app for video. Nathan's social media will be over there. That ConvertKit link will be there, as well as that Ira Glass quote and video that we were talking about earlier. I think you might want to check it out. And you can find Nathan at nathanberry.com as well. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much for stopping by. I absolutely appreciate you taking the time. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.